beautiful girl.
Hi, what a delight for my eyeballs today.
I feel like such a California girl.
You are the quintessential California girl. I'll give you listeners a little visual. Kristen's long, flowy golden locks are like tousled off to one side. She has the little dewy California, it's 110 degree glow, but she still looks fresh and lovely and amazing.
You are the best friend for any person to ever have. I feel like I should like rent you out.
Like, you should.
Like rent a bestie?
Yes. That's what we should do. It should be like a little app where we'll like just tell you how beautiful you are.
That's right. And we'll giggle with you and we'll talk about
whatever
you
want.
Clothes, yeah. Whatever you need. Okay, so then I'll give a visual. So if you couldn't tell by now, Natalie and I are not in the same place. I'm in California. She's in New York City. She is now sitting in her gorgeous apartment, looking like Audrey Hepburn. Her hair is half up, half down. She has a beautiful white cami on and some gorgeous silver heart-shaped earrings. And you look like just a little piece of perfection. And little flowers are like peeking up over you. Like
just, it's true. Mm-hmm. I went and got beautiful new flowers at the market the other day because you know that I believe every day has to be romantic.
Yes.
And also my very best friend. Well, I mean, Kristen is also my very best friend, but my longest best friend, who's been my best friend since I was 17 years old, is here visiting me in New York. So I went out and I got beautiful fresh flowers and I made the apartment look beautiful and I got cupcakes from Magnolia Bakery and made it very special because I do believe that you have to romance your girlfriends and you have to treat them like queens so that they never forget how special they are. So Kristen, I can't wait for you to be back in New York because I have so many romantic dates planned for us.
I'm so ready to be romanced by you.
Actually, Kristen and I, as many of you know, are traveling to Italy to teach our favorite workshop, the Pleasure Retreat. And we decided that we needed to go early. So we had vacation time, just the two of us, so we could have romance and love before we teach.
That's right. It's very important.
It's very important.
Well, you know, so much of what we talk about, I think, on our podcast is that we are the creators of our own lives. And it's up to us to be deliberate creators about what we're thinking, what are the thoughts that we're thinking, what are the intentions we're putting out there, what are we saying that our life is going to be about, and just having the mindset of every day I'm going to make my life art.
Mm.
In this moment, can I make my life art? And that becomes a really wonderful filter as you make it, as you create your life, is can I include this in my life and still be art? So if you find yourself like this is, I'm talking just to myself here, you find yourself with too much on your schedule and go, oh, I can't do this and still have it be art.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? Or,
yeah.
Oh, if I'd make this choice, that doesn't feel like the most artful.
Right. And one thing, can I tell them the game that we've just started playing?
Oh, please.
Kristen and I started playing a game. This is Kristen's brainchild, and I just jumped on the bandwagon of every day saying, this is the best day of my life. Now, you may be thinking, well, that's easy for some people, or it's easy if you have lots of money in the bank, or it's easy if you're on vacation, or whatever. But that's what the game is.
Yes.
You declare, today is the best day of my life, and then seek out evidence to prove that you're right.
That's what it is. Because once you say it out loud, you start to look for evidence of why it is the best day of your life.
Right. So then even if you're having one of those days where you stub your toe and you drop your laundry and someone spills coffee on you, it's like, no, but today's the best day of my life. So even though all of those things are happening, there's other evidence here. And how can I find it? How can I see it?
Yes.
And it just becomes a really fun game. And it is actually surprising how you catch yourself in certain moments thinking, oh, maybe normally I would have missed this, but because I'm thinking, I'm looking for good, I'm looking for good, I'm noticing this good in a new way.
And that's how it goes.
That's how it goes.
It's a way of making every day sacred.
I really believe that. And I do think it's really easy for us to say, life is sacred, life is happy, life is good, when, right?
Yes.
When I'm on vacation, when it's the weekend, You know, it's that very classic thing of like the energy on Monday is different than the energy on Friday. I had a teacher once that talked about the best day of your vacation is actually the day before your vacation starts. Because even if you're in the snowstorm, at your desk at work, you're already so excited about this week off or 2 weeks off that you have coming. That's actually the best day. And then you could be 1 week later on the second last day of your vacation on a beach with a beautiful drink in your hand, you know, with some getting a massage, being so happy, and you're already thinking about having to be at work on Monday. So you've already left the vacation. So it's not really that your happiness is determined by the outer circumstance, which is a perfect segue into today's podcast, but that the inner world and what the inner world is connected to is actually determining how you feel in any given moment.
And that's why the thoughts we choose to think are what determines how beautiful our experience is. Exactly. And that we get to be creators of those thoughts.
Right.
And that is what becomes really exciting when you start to play on that level.
Really exciting.
Now, I have a question for you to launch us into our topic today.
Please.
You know how much I love to interview you. so the topic is today, what am I doing wrong? Mm-hmm. And you chose this topic. So I'm curious about the origin story, if you will, Miss Natalie Roy. How did this topic come to you?
Well, you know what's fascinating is I do think there is this tape inside of us that's always playing. And I do think that the tape is always asking us the same questions in different varieties. Mm-hmm. And so as I was getting, I was actually spending time with some friends and we were doing this game where we were asking questions. And one of the questions was, what is your biggest accomplishment to date? And people were going around and saying, you know, like having and raising my child is my biggest accomplishment, or meeting my partner was my biggest accomplishment, or, you know, getting to this point in my career was my biggest accomplishment. And when it came around to me, it was really interesting because the answer for me was so obvious, but I felt like it was so contrary to what everyone else was saying. And the answer for me was my greatest accomplishment is every single day, no matter how evolved I get or how far I get along on my journey, every single day there is a voice in my head that says, you can't do it, you're not enough, you're doing something wrong, you're not working hard enough, you're falling behind, someone else is better than you. And I have gotten to a place where more often than not, I can say to that voice, thank you, but I'm over here doing what I'm doing. And there was a very long time where that voice was truth, where as soon as I heard it, it was my truth. Like, you're doing something wrong. And then the next thing would be, I have to figure out what I'm doing wrong because the voice told me I'm doing something wrong.
Yes.
Or you're not enough. Oh my gosh, the voice in my head said I'm not enough. So now I have to overcompensate and try to make myself better or try to improve myself. So for so long, my every thought, my every action, my every feeling about myself and my life was determined by this voice in my head. And my greatest accomplishment is being able to know that I am not that voice. And that voice is not speaking the truth. It is just speaking an opinion.
Yeah.
And so as soon as I was thinking about that, I thought, well, I think a question that goes on inside all of us all the time is, what am I doing wrong? And I, as I was saying, I've been spending time with my very best friend from high school. And she said, she has two beautiful children, age 5 and 4. And she said, you know, I always felt like I was nailing it as a mom until I went to mom group and heard what all the other moms were doing. And then it was like, how am I not doing enough? How am I not measuring up? How is someone else doing a better job of being a mom than me? What am I doing wrong? What am I doing wrong? What am I doing wrong? Mm-hmm. And I thought, so you see, whether it's being a parent, whether it's being an artist, whether it's being whatever, there's always this voice in our head that is saying, what am I doing wrong? And so what I wanted to think about is our relationship to that question.
Yeah.
And because it's so universal, then the antidote to it must also be so universal.
That's right. Because realizing that every single person has that voice in their head. And I was telling you earlier today about on the plane watching the Zen Diaries of Gary Chandelain and him writing about his own insecurity about performing and not being funny and fears of never being successful. And it made me laugh because it made me think so much about like, oh, these are just like Tennessee Williams journals about not being able to write or not feeling like he's ever going to make it. And I'm like, man, everybody has that voice.
Every last one of us. And I actually do feel like the voice will always hit you where you're the most masterful and you have the most genius.
Yeah.
So it's almost like the voice in Steve Jobs was like, you're not creative. when that was like his thing. Or the voice in Oprah is, you know, you're not going to have a big enough presence or voice to make change in the world or whatever, right? So it always makes me think that it will always hit you where you're actually the most powerful. So when it starts telling you in whatever area it is for you, like I know for Janelle, my darling friend, she's the best mom I know. And if I ever get the opportunity to be a mom, I will just text her every day and say, just tell me everything that you did, because she is so masterful. So of course the ego voice will attack her in that place, because she's masterful there. Of course, you know, if you were meant to design beautiful, incredible buildings that are going to change the landscape of a city, the voice will hit you there. Of course, if you are the most interesting creative chef that's going to create new tastes that the world has never had, the voice will hit you there. So wherever we have the most strength, the most power, we will be told we are the most weak. And I think that's really fascinating to just know as an experiment.
Yeah, well, because that voice is the voice of the ego that is afraid of us outgrowing who we are. It's afraid of our bigness. It's afraid of how huge we might get. It's afraid of what happens when we expand past what we've known.
Right. So as soon as I started asking myself this question, I stumbled upon this mystic Sufi story. And you know, I love me some ancient texts. So I just want to read this story, because I also, as I was reading this story, I kept imagining that this was Kristen in the story. And it just kept bringing me joy and making me laugh, because it just feels like if you were an ancient Sufi woman, this is what you would do.
I love it.
And I could just see it all. So this is a story of a Sufi mystic woman. One evening, as the sun was setting and there was a little light still left on the road, people found and stumbled upon a woman on the road searching. She was an old woman and her eyes were weak and it was difficult for her to see. The neighbors came to help her and they asked, "What are you searching for?" And she said, "The question is irrelevant. I'm searching, so if you can help, help." And they laughed and said, "Well, surely you've gone mad. You say that our question is irrelevant, but if we don't know what we're searching for, how can we help?" And she said, "Okay, well, just to satisfy you, I'm searching for my needle. I've lost my needle." And so they started helping her. But soon they realized that the road was very big and a needle is a very tiny thing. So they said, "Well, will you tell us where you lost it, the exact precise place? Otherwise, this is going to be very difficult. The road is big and we can go on searching and searching forever. So where did you lose it?" And she said, "Again, you ask such irrelevant questions. How is it concerned with my search?" They stopped and said, "You have certainly gone crazy." The woman said, "Okay, well, just to satisfy you, I've lost it in my house." And then they said, "Well, then why are we searching out here?" And she said, "Because there is light here, and inside there is no light." So at first, this story seems a little bit like, yeah, the woman's crazy. Like, how can we unpack this? But what is interesting about this story is it makes me think that all of us come to Earth in these bodies as these human beings that we are. And we're all searching for something. Call it happiness. Call it love. Call it purpose. We're all searching for something. And the logical place it feels like for us to look is always on the outside. The outside always is where it's overstimulated, overexposed, where there's more light, seemingly, right? So we look outside of ourselves for these things, the bigger house, the bigger car, another child, bigger paycheck, a new job. And we're always searching, searching, searching. And we think that just because there's more light there, we're going to find it. But where we actually lost the thing we're looking for is deep inside. And Osho, who's one of our faves, always says that we must not be so concerned with what we are seeking, because what we are actually seeking is the seeker. And the seeker lives in the darkness that's inside. And so inside all of us, there is this dark, quiet, peaceful state. It's the Purusha. It's the spirit. It's consciousness. And we spend all of our time avoiding that place because we think the outside world has it for us. But when we become more concerned with the seeker than what we are seeking, it forces us to go inside. And this reminds me of this meditation retreat I did recently. And I think I talked about it in another podcast, but it was basically this 3-day retreat where you just had to sit and meditate and be with yourself. And for the first hour, I was fine because I'm a meditator. And then hour 2, 3, 4, 5, I started freaking out. There's no clock. There's no cell phone. What time is it? What's everyone else doing? What's everyone else's experience like? And I was anxious like I've never been anxious because I wanted an outer stimulus to distract myself. And then I had this awareness at some point, maybe 7 hours in, Natalie, this is an opportunity to be alone with yourself and your higher power, and all you want to do is get out. You think there's something more interesting out there than in here with you and divine. And if you're actually brave enough to go in, you might find yourself, and then what you're looking for may become totally irrelevant. Because when we find ourselves, we actually find wholeness. We actually find that we're not without anything. We actually find that all the things in the outside world are actually irrelevant compared to the whole, complete, pure joy, pure bliss, pure love that we are on the inside. But we're so scared to go inside because it feels scary and lonely and empty that we would rather continue looking for this needle in a haystack outside where there's just a little bit of light. And we may spend our whole lives outside looking, and we may get these temporary hits of satisfaction or relief, but we never actually achieve what we want because we miss knowing ourselves as the seeker.
And I believe so deeply that we come to the planet actually having that inward connection. I think when we arrive as little babies, we got that. And we live in a world that is built on an illusion that what we need is out there. So from the moment we arrive, the well-meaning people around us start to train and condition us to be outwardly focused.
Right. Our spirit is inwardly focused, mm-hmm. but our body, our form mm-hmm. is actually external. Our yes. senses are external, right? Like when you touch a fabric, when you taste food, that's an external experience. Your eyes open outward. They don't open inward, right? Your ears listen outwardly. The legs move out into the world in time and space. So everything appears like it's outer. So it makes sense to us. Oh, the answer must be out. But the seeker is inside. And unless we know the seeker, we can't really seek what we're here to seek.
Exactly. And that's why people feel so peaceful when they are like at the beach at night, right? Mm. Watching the waves come in. Or if you have seen a beautiful sunrise, you have this moment. And what has happened is you've reconnected to that place inside where the all-knowing is. And it's rarely we allow ourselves the time and the space to get quiet enough. There is that when we came to the planet, you know, our soul came knowing exactly what it wants to do here. It has all the inner guidance. It has all the inner instruction. And when we start to, when we get to the planet and then everyone around us is telling us, no, don't go in, like it's out here. Pay attention to these rules. Do this homework. You have to get here. You have to plan for this to get there, right? Like all of those things start to train us that it's about pleasing someone on the outside as opposed to going in where there's a soul that came to this planet for a reason and it already knows. So the more we get disconnected from that place inside of us, the more lost and adrift we're going to start to feel in life.
And it makes me think of like a camera that's like overexposed with light. Mm-hmm. As your eyes, like a camera lens, focuses on light, the light actually kind of makes your eyes adjust to it, mm-hmm. right? And if you've ever had the experience of being in a dark room, at first it feels like your eyes can't handle it. And then your eyes will start to adjust. You start to adjust to the darkness. And before you know it, you could be sitting in a pitch black room and you could start to see shapes. You can start to see texture. And so we are so overstimulated, always looking to the outside world for the answer, that the minute we go inside, it seems like nothing's there. Mm-hmm. It just seems like a dark room where nothing is there. But if we are actually brave enough to sit in the darkness, we'll actually see that the room that we are in is filled with riches, with treasure, with things that we want, with things that we need. It's all already inside of us, but it's subtle and our eyes are so overstimulated by this constant obsession with being in the light, we just can't see it.
Right. And that, like, you know, when you talk about that, the image that comes to my head is like when you're on a red carpet and there's lots of like lights flashing, right? It starts to make you a little dizzy. What happens is when we get too hell-bent on looking at the external world to see where we are in life, it will start to disorient us.
Yes, exactly. Right? So
just like a lot of flashing lights will make you blind, if you are constantly checking in with how you feel based on what the outer world looks like, it's going to make you dizzy and you actually are going to become rudderless. You're going to lose your focus.
Exactly. And there's actually this amazing study in psychology that really is like referenced in this, where people were asked to sit in a chair and the floor in this room and the chair were on a slant. Like, let's say it was like a 15 degree slant or a 20 degree slant. I can't remember what it was. And the entire room was slanted and the chair was slanted that people would sit in. And people were asked to come into the room and sit in the chair. And when the participants were sitting, they were then asked, are you sitting upright or are you sitting on a slant? Now, some of the participants said, I'm sitting on a slant. And some of the participants said, I'm sitting upright. And what they discerned from this is that people who thought they were sitting completely upright, even though they were slanted, were considered people that were externally referenced, which was, as long as the entire environment was slanted and they were also slanted, so the external environment is on a slant, you're on a slant, as long as you are matched up with your external environment, you feel like you're upright. So you're externally referenced. You get your reference point from your outer world. Other people said, I'm on a slant. And it's because they're internally referenced, that their internal compass, their internal knowing said, this doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
The external world is doing something, but my internal world is doing something different than my form is doing. And that was so amazing for me, that to think all of us have a reference point of reality that is either external or internal. And I would argue in today's world of complete overstimulation, everything has to be fast and now and internet and texting and moving so fast and hustling, that so many of us are getting our worth and our validation and who we are as an external reference, that I do believe many of us are losing our ability to listen and be connected to any kind of internal reference. And it's like we're all walking around on a slant, and it's starting to feel normal to us because more of us are slanted than connected to the internal reference.
Right. Well, this is so funny because this is exactly the study that I read this morning was about what happens when more people are believing the untruth. Okay. So check this out. I'm reading this book. It's called The Pursuit of Dreams. Okay. It's by this doctor scientist, and he has this study. I'm showing Natalie what the thing looks like, even though that doesn't work at all for a podcast. So there was a study that happened in the 1950s. Dr. Solomon Ask. He's a Polish psychologist. So he showed people this line on a card, right? And then he would show people another set of three lines on the card, and he'll say, which one was the length of the one I just showed you, right? And when people were in there by themselves, every time they would nail it the right way. They would guess the right line. So basically, you know, four people out of four people will always guess, right? That it's like 100% people know that's how long the line was before. Now they started doing these experiments with actors. So they would bring in like a control group, and they told all these actors, choose a different line, choose like the longer line. And what would happen is when an entire group of people said, oh, that's the one, it would sway the one person who was the
actual participant.
Exactly. Right.
Wow.
And, but what was interesting is this is, here's the question. Did the subjects who gave the wrong answer simply conform to the social pressure to fit in, or did the societal context actually alter their perception of reality to the point where they weren't even aware of their error? So in 2005, there's this other study, right? This guy, Dr. Gregory Burns, and he does a very similar series of studies, right, with a control group of actors who are saying the wrong answers to a series of different mental tasks. But he looked at the brainwaves of people. And what they found out that if subjects, okay, I'll just read this because it's so good. If subjects gave the wrong answer to conform with the social pressure, they had increased activity in the frontal part of the brain area dealing with conscious decision, right? However, there was no activity in the frontal part of the brain in those areas responsible for conscious thought. What happened was people who gave the wrong answer had increased activity in the brain areas dedicated to vision and spatial perception. So what happens is if you were around people who are telling you untruths, your brain thinks it's making decisions, but it's not. It actually has no ability to make decisions. It just believes the untruths that everyone else is doing.
Whoa!
Right? Like that. So our societal context influences our ability to make decisions, even if it's based on a false precept. So this is so crazy, right? They said there were a few, right, who gave the correct answer. And if you did give the correct answer, those few showed they had increased activity in the brain areas dedicated to emotions of pain, fear, rejection, and excitement. So the study said in 2005, living in truth against the social environment comes with an emotional cost and various degrees of suffering. Boom.
Wow.
So if you are saying, I am going to live my truth and no matter what, keep checking in and not, it's almost like you have to pull away from the world and
yes,
the stories the world is telling and start to listen so deeply internally. And with that, there will be a cost.
Wow.
Crazy,
well, you
right?
You know what? That's so crazy. But it also, you know, just to give a shout out to you and to our friendship, this is exactly what I feel like the gift when you first came into my life was. I feel like I was in one of those controlled studies where I had been told illusion much of my life, but there was this inner knowing inside of me, there was this little fighter inside of me that really wanted to believe something different. And yet constantly reflected to me were these false limiting conditions. And I think so many of us have this. And mine kind of looked like, if you work really hard, eventually you will get ahead. Things like that. And when you came into my life, you had these beliefs of like, life can be for play, life can be fun, every day can be magic. And there was the little girl inside of me screaming, that's what I've always wanted to think was possible. But so long, there has been all of this illusion that it's like I had conformed to the line, but deep inside me, I knew the line was a different size. I knew it could be so much bigger. And so I do think part of my awakening to joy and to pleasure, which is why I love teaching joy and pleasure with you, is because I had the knowing inside myself that I lacked the confidence to go against the illusion. And then being around a new conditioning that was so life-bringing and positive and uplifting gave me permission to start seeing the line the way I had always wanted to see it, right? And I do believe that, you know, they say that you're only as successful as the 7 people you spend the most time with. It is that thing of when you spend time with people that have no scarcity about money, then it does allow for you to have changing beliefs about money that could be more uplifting and more abundant. When you hang out with people that take a stand for joy and pleasure, it gives you permission to activate that in your life. And so we all need to know that we have that power inside of us, regardless of our external circumstance. And just a shout out to, if you're fortunate enough to meet an amazing best friend or an amazing partner or have an amazing child or have an amazing colleague that can help foster that with you, then that's amazing. And it's also just so important for us to know we all have it inside of us. And sometimes it's like we say, who you are is what you are willing to stand for when no one agrees with you.
That's right. And it takes a pulling away from the world. You know, I always like to think of like my favorite time during the day is a morning practice. Mm. And if you know me, if I can get a 3-hour morning practice in, I'm the happiest girl in the world.
The happiest girls. That's why we like traveling together so much. It's just a day long morning practice.
It is. And because I love hanging out with my soul. I love being alone because my soul delights me. And I feel like when you start to hang out with your soul more and more, then you start to change your reference point so that throughout the day, you can start saying to yourself, how am I feeling right now? Ooh, what is it that I really want? What would feel like joy right now? Where is love pulling me? So you can start to have these internal questions that will direct you as opposed to checking out to what's going on in the outer world and comparing yourself there.
And what I've even found for myself is there's so such deep roots of codependency inlaid in all of this. For example, just subtle ways of if you are meeting a friend and the friend says, where do you want to have dinner? And you say, wherever you want. And really, inside of yourself, you would feel more comfortable just doing what that other person would want. But for me, I was so that girl forever. Oh, it doesn't matter, wherever you want, whatever you want to do. And I felt relief when someone else would take charge and make that decision. And then what would happen as I started traveling by myself and having time by myself, I noticed myself when it came time to make those kinds of decisions, feeling anxious because I didn't know what I wanted. I didn't know how to tap into what I wanted. I didn't know how to give myself what I wanted. I didn't know how to say, do I want this kind of food or this kind of food? Because I'd lived in a pattern for so long of always deferring to the external reference that my internal reference was like rusty. Like I didn't know how to communicate with it. But the gift was, oh, if I can sit with the uncomfortableness, then maybe just in a minute or two, or maybe a half hour later after wandering around, oh, I want to do this. And it took time. It took a lot of time in aloneness with myself for myself to be brave enough to start telling me what it wanted.
Oh, that's so good, Natalie. I've never heard you describe it that way before. But that is the changing point. It's really about the moment that we are willing to stay with the discomfort of I will be without the world stimulus to figure out what's going on inside.
Yeah. Osho has this amazing quote, self-knowledge is possible only in deep aloneness. You will have to let go of the validation, advice, and even love of the world.
Yeah. Yeah. And you do, you have to be willing to let go of the love of the world.
Yeah. And it's interesting because then, of course, the next kind of phase, I mean, as you know, I just got back from my latest trip overseas, mm-hmm. and I had a lot of time of just wandering around Paris. And we like to say this thing of following the charm, right? Mm-hmm. And it was, and all of a sudden, because I've gotten more comfortable with it, now it's like the only game in town. Now it's all you want to do. Now all I want to do is go, oh, what's my desire? What do I want? Where do I want to go? Oh, I don't know yet. Okay, I'll wander. I'll wander. Oh, I'll go down this street. Oh, I'll go. Oh, who cares if I get lost? Who cares what happens? And then it becomes what life is really about, because it's about me being in relationship with me, and it becomes the love affair of your life. It becomes that thing that that Sufi woman was so yes. busy outside looking for. Yes. It's like, oh, me getting to be with me, me getting to take myself for dinner, me getting to listen to the calling of my own heart, to give myself permission to want what I want. It's so fascinating because there was recently a woman I was talking to who's older. She's 65, and she was saying, you know, oh, if I could just live in your apartment every day, I would sit in your windowsill and I would read a book and I would look out at New York City. And I thought to myself, so you know what your calling is, but it's okay for me to have it. Is it okay for you to have it? Mm-hmm. Right? It's like when we, it's easy for us to look in the outside world and project it onto someone else what we actually want. But that's when we get jealousy and get into lack and get into competition and get into resentment.
Because we won't stand for it.
Right. Instead, we can use that as clues. Oh, that's what's for me.
Yes.
And well, how can I give myself that, even if it's in a small way?
That was one of, I'm so sorry, I just got so excited. No, I didn't mean to jump in. But that was one of our first lectures ever, was the jealousy pivot. Is mm-hmm. when you find yourself jealous, that is the one most wonderful gift to go, where have I been denying myself that? When yeah. did I take that off the table?
When did I take that off the table for myself?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When did I say it wasn't possible? You know, I got so excited when you said the love affair of my life is the love affair of me with me. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I feel like, that's like my hottest love affair that's ever going on. It's me with, and I want to say, you know, I often call it, it's me with the divine, but it's mm-hmm. me really with my highest self, it's the way that divine, the universe, the source of love in the world reveals itself to me as the presence. Right. Yeah. And so that is me with me. It's me with the essence of truth. And that's the whole thing that, like, my poetry book that I have been writing is all about. It's been all these like love affair poems about me with the essence of love that reveals itself as me, which is yes. also God, you know, which is also, yes. you know, and when we go deep enough into that place inside ourselves, we're touching that place that is also within everyone, right?
It just makes me think, when I don't make it anyone else's responsibility to be my source and supply, like when I get so much joy out of going to this one flower shop on the Upper West Side, and they only take cash. So I only go there when I have cash on me, right? But there's like these moments like once every 3 weeks where I have enough cash to like get like pimp out my house with flowers, right? Like I save up my cash flow for my laundry yes. and my flowers. And I'll go in and I just buy all the flowers, and it's like such a big bundle, I can barely carry it. And it just brings me so much joy to give myself that. Now someone could say, well, yes, but when my partner or my spouse does that, that fills me with so much joy. Absolutely. But when you take it off of their to-do list and you make it your own job to romance yourself, something happens in the space that you give your partnerships where they get to show up in a whole new unexpected way that they feel a freedom and a relaxation because there's no neediness between the two of you. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like then you get to get like triple delighted.
Yes.
You know, you get to delight yourself. They get to delight you. There's unexpected surprises. There's all of this beautiful new expansion in your world when you don't make it anyone else's responsibility to give you anything.
That's right. You've made your number one job to listen to your soul and answer that call. And then once you do that, all the wells are full, right? You're no longer looking to the outer world to give you your good because you know where that comes from. Then everything else is gravy.
Everything else is gravy. It's the thing of saying everything that I need has actually been inside the whole time. It's just my eyes are so exposed to light. I haven't adjusted enough to the inner darkness to be able to see that it's actually all already here.
Well, you know, one of the things, because I read your lecture notes. You talked about, you know, going inside and how that's like the dark night of the soul, mm-hmm. right? And people are so afraid of that darkness they might find within. And of course, me loving story structure so much, one of the things that I thought about was when a protagonist goes into the dark night of the soul, what happens is the death of their false self. So it's the death of their illusion. It's the death of who they thought they were, so their real self can be born. So often we get afraid of sitting with of what we perceive as our darkness. I'm afraid of getting still because I might see my insecurity, my inadequacy, the ways I feel like I've messed up my life, whatever those things are. But if we're actually willing to get still and go all the way in and allow whatever is there to come up, what will happen is eventually the love that is the truth of who we are, the light that is the truth of who we are, will illuminate all of those dark spots.
Yeah.
They will. A quote unquote die to the truth, which is who we really are, which is luminosity. So what will get revealed when you sit in the dark night of the soul is that you are the light.
Right. And it makes me think, you know, with the experiment you were talking about where it was like all the paid actors saying the illusion, like, oh, the line's really this long. So the only thing that's actually dying is that.
Yes, that's right.
The only thing that's left is you knowing the truth of how long that stick is. And why are we afraid of that? Because we are afraid of our own power.
That is it.
So we would rather keep the crowd around and say, well, I was just going with the crowd. It's not my fault. Than actually say, I know myself as powerful. I know myself as able to create anything I want. And I know myself to be powerful enough to transcend the life I'm living, to live the life I want to. But it's so scary to do that because there's a lot of things that are going to have to change and die and be painful. There's a lot of rejection. There's a lot of things that are going to happen if I take this stand. So it's easier to sit back and say, well, I didn't know the line was that long. Everyone else said it was.
Well, here's the thing that I love, and I think about this all the time. But the calling inside to become that which we are meant to be will never go away.
It never goes away. You know, when people say I'm giving up on my dream, I'm like, it's impossible. Your dream is never, ever going to give up on you. So you may decide to not actively do it. But if you think for a second your dream is going anywhere, it's going to knock. It's going to nag. It's going to be there till the day you die. So you might as well do it.
Yeah. This is what happens when we try not to listen to the calling, right? We try to suppress it, right? We try to suppress it with addictions, or if we take all of that and go inward, depression occurs. Like all of these things happen when we actually just need to sit and get quiet enough and listen and embrace our truth. And then that truth has a wisdom. That truth actually knows where to go, what to do, what's the next right step to take. And it's all there for us inside.
It's all there. It's easier and more peaceful and more fun and more fluid than we could ever imagine. Because it's only the illusion that tells us it's going to be hard. And it tells us it's going to be hard so the illusion gets to hang around and we don't kill it.
That's it. It's actually harder to hang in the suffering of the illusion.
And it is!
And all of the overworking or addictions or whatever it is you want to call it, all of that stuff is actually no fun. But
yes,
because here's the thing about your truth and your calling. It's directly connected to what you love most and what turns you on most and what gives you the most amount of energy and the most enthusiasm.
And what you were designed to do.
That's right?
Like a car is designed to drive on a road and an airplane is designed to fly in the sky. So the second an airplane tries to drive down a road, it's going to be more complicated. It's going to take more work. It's going to take more engineering. You're going to have to change things around. It's more work. But if you follow your essential nature, it will actually make sense. It will be easier. But all of the hired actors of illusion in your life are going to tell you it's going to be harder. And it's just the willingness to say, first, I'm willing to believe that things could be different. And second, I'm willing to go inside until I become internally referenced. Mm-hmm. And that might take a minute, you know, like when I had my hip injury and I literally could not walk one step for 3 weeks. 3 weeks is a long time when you can't take a step. And it was just going to take however long it took. And I had to say, go in more, go in more, go in more, go in as long as it takes. And once you come back out, but you maintain that internal reference, all of the illusion, it's like it's moved out of the way. So you no longer even have to work hard to transcend it. It just isn't even there anymore. Because you just say, oh, no, that's on a slant, so that's not for me. And then you go a different way.
There it is. There it is. And then I feel like what happens is the question internally starts to change. So what am I doing wrong turns into what is the love inside of me revealing to me about the path of my destiny?
Exactly.
What is the perfection that I am? What is the truth that I came here to reveal? The question starts to change.
Yes, it's like the question, what am I doing wrong? The answer is you're asking the wrong question.
That's right. Beckwith talks about that all the time. He says, life will answer whatever question we ask it. It's designed to do that, right? Mm. So if we want to change our life, we just start to ask more empowering questions and then get still and listen to the answer.
There's this great, I don't know if all of our listeners know, John Patrick Shanley. He's my favorite playwright. He's phenomenal. I mean, he's written so many beautiful plays. I mean, if I could just be an actress and only do his plays for the rest of my life, I would be the happiest girl in the world. And he's a beautiful writer. And if you follow him on Facebook, he always posts the most amazing quotes. And he had this one the other day, and it just struck me as like the most beautiful thing I've ever read. So here's John Patrick Shanley's quote. The evil queen had a magic mirror. She always asked it, who is the fairest? If I were the mirror, I would reply, who cares? I would reply, stand aside. You're blocking the angels, the sunlight, history, miracles, those in needs, cave paintings, multitudes of children. Ask me an interesting question or stand aside and let the world pour into me like glory. Right? It's like we stand in front of this mirror and say, what am I doing wrong? How can I be better? How can I be more? And it's like, stand aside. You're blocking me from angels, miracle, history, those in need, my purpose, my dharma, children, love, everything in the world that's available to me is just blocked by this dumbass question that you keep asking yourself.
Well, and that is fascinating because they're talking about a mirror is in front of you. And one of the things you and I talk about all the time is that that's all the outer world is. It's a hologram projecting back to you what is going on internally. It is a mirror. So when we change the inner dialogue, everything else changes. So when it starts to be about where is their love, where is their beauty, where is their magic,
how is this the best day of my life?
How is this the best day of my life? How am I the
exact perfect person for what I'm here to do? Yes. How is my dharma unfolding perfectly today? How is there a miracle unfolding that is so big it's going to blow my mind? When we start asking those questions, we don't even have to look for the damn needle anymore. We don't need a needle. We have the whole tapestry and it's already done and it's already inside.
That's it. Mic drop.
That's it.
That's it.
So let's ask new questions this week.
And let's create time for inner stillness so that we can get to know the most beautiful tapestry of all, our own soul.
Exactly. And that's why, I mean, total segue, but that's why traveling for me this year has been very potent, because I have personally released a lot of illusion, a lot of identity, a lot of change has happened in my life this year. And I just intuitively felt, just travel as much as you can, see new things, be in new places, experience life, and travel by yourself or do whatever, but see life in a new way. And so if you find yourself particularly stuck in some disempowering questions, it may be that shaking it up, you could come to Italy with us and have a whole new conversation with yourself. You could be in a new place, eating new food with new people, people who don't know you, and have a totally new experience with your purpose, your desire. What does your inner muse want to say to you? What is the charm that you want to follow? If you're not used to doing those things, this could be a really changing, transformative trip for you. We only have two spots left. So if it feels like the thing for you, this could be the moment.
That's oh my goodness. It's so exciting. And one of the things that I find particularly thrilling, and I was just talking to a friend about this the other day, is when you travel, you find yourself going with the flow. And it was actually a couple I was talking to. They unexpectedly came into Los Angeles and they were like, oh my goodness, we didn't expect to come here, but every moment the right thing has happened. We've had no plans and everything that we need shows up and all the right places, and we are ending up, you know, in the best experiences. And the woman counterpart looked at me and said, it's like all of life is supposed to be like this, except usually we're just busy planning. And I'm like,
right.
Yeah, that's it. So when we allow ourselves to travel, we see how held we are all the time. And I always feel like any issues we might have about scarcity get healed, because all of a sudden you see like, oh, look at how all my needs get met. Look at how everything I need shows up.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, when you and I are talking about standing for what it is we want, like when you decide, oh, I will give myself what my soul wants, watch how the whole universe gets behind that.
Yeah, because it wants to give you the declaration of you're moving in the right direction. Mm-hmm. So that's a really exciting thing. I always remember when you first were trying to encourage me to travel, and I kept saying, I can't afford it. The money's never going to show up. There's never been a trip where it hasn't shown up.
It always shows up.
Always shows up. It's amazing. Yeah. So we do have two spots left.
Yes.
And because we only have two spots left, we decided to extend Kristen's birthday discount to the last two spots. So we lowered the price by $200, and that was going to be for the month of June. But if you want one of those last spots, we will continue to honor that discount so that you can join us.
Come play. It's the best group of people who signed up.
Oh, it's going to be such joy. Oh, I'm so exciting.
In Rome, I'm ready. I'm going to buy all exciting new dresses.
Yes, you are. Uh-huh. That's exactly what's going to happen.
I want to give a quick shout out that I have a new online writing class starting July 17th. So if you want to sign up to write that calling that is in your soul, that thing that wants to come out of you, come play with me. It'll be a good time.
Kristen's writing class is really spectacular. You don't only get Kristen, but you get a community of other writers that are cheerleaders for you doing your work on the planet. And that can be so helpful when the ego voice tells you you're not enough and it's time to quit. That's a really powerful thing.
Thanks, love.
I mean, we have all these new exciting things, but mostly what we want you to do is go to our new exciting website.
Yes.
We just had a website makeover by our incredible girl in our community named Ashley Mundy. And we should actually put her link on our website. If you need a website designed, this girl is heaven on earth. She is amazing. She just designed us the most beautiful new Create website. So go to our website, thecreateseries.com. You can see all of our new cute pictures. You can see all of our new cute offerings. We have an online course for sale that we sell as a whole 7-hour course, or that we sell in blocks. We have 8 blocks of material. And if you have specific areas in terms of manifesting your dreams that are a little bit sticky for you, you can find out more about what blocks might work for you in terms of these courses. And those are all on sale on our cute new website. We have new pictures. We have bios. We have links to all kinds of really cool things. We have also that you can find out more information about Italy on that site. So thecreateseries.com. And you can join our mailing list. And we promise we do not bombard you, but we will tell you every month about really cool things going on.
I think that's it.
I think that's it. We love you. Kristen, I love you so much. Love from New York to Los Angeles to you.
Natalie, I love you so much. I love looking at your face. And I just want to tell all of our listeners, we love you. Thank you for being with us. And we're proud of you. You're brave. Keep going in the direction of your dreams.
Yeah, even showing up to listen every week, even showing up to be part of this new conversation, it takes courage. And we value you. And wherever you are listening to this right now, you matter. And you showing up in this world matters. We need you and we love you.
Goodbye.
Bye.
If you want to know about the Create Workshop Series, you can go to
www.thecreateseries.com.
And if you want to know more about us, you can go to kristenhenge.com or
natalieroy.com.
And if you want to come to Create, you can go to
the Actors Green Room in New York City. And it is Sunday nights from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. and Tuesdays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m.
And their website is www.theactorsgreenroom.com. And you can buy Create on demand if you don't live in New York City.
Woohoo!